You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, August 28th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Among our top stories this evening,
officials from the Deputy Sheriff's Office attempted to attach a former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's property to offset outstanding salary arrears for 13 former MDCT employees.
This was in spite of the fact that there is no judgment against the President. The President did not employ anyone, has no debt with anyone. So this attempt was actually an attempt to embarrass him.
ZANU-PF issues a gagging order barring provincial party bosses from speaking publicly about escalating factional fights that are threatening to tear the ruling party apart.
What Simon Kamo is trying to do is trying to please the president, he's trying to please the first lady by trying to say that he is protecting the first family from scrutiny. But what he is doing actually is a violation of democratic principles.
And the World Health Organization says Ebola could infect more than 20,000 people across West Africa by the time the outbreak is over.
Officials from the Deputy Sheriff's Office descended on the Highlands home of former Prime Minister and MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai to attach his property today to offset outstanding salary arrears for some former MDCT employees. The move was blocked by his lawyer and party spokesman, Douglas Monzora, who claims the Sheriff's Office is out to humiliate Mr. Tsvangirai. But the Sheriff's Office says it is executing an order of the court to attach the property to pay for labor damages to 13 party employees who were unlawfully dismissed in 2010. The court ordered that Mr. Morgan Tsvangirai's Strathaven Harare house and 62 party vehicles be auctioned to pay off $491,760 in labor damages. The employees worked in the security department at the party's Harvest House headquarters. In addition to the house on stand number 2 Lyndhurst Lane, Strathaven Township, another party house on stand number 16099 Sekechitungwiza was listed as part of the properties earmarked for attachment. But Mr. Tsvangirai's lawyers say they are trying to reach a common ground with the workers' lawyers Manasseh and Manasseh Legal Practitioners. Efforts to get a comment from Wilson Manasseh were futile as his phone went unanswered. But Monzora tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the move by the deputy sheriff is disturbing.
Yes, indeed. There were attempts that were made to attach President Tsvangirai's private property here in Harare by the deputy sheriff. This was in spite of the fact that there is no judgment against the president. The president did not employ anyone, has no debt with anyone. So this attempt was actually an attempt to embarrass him, to cause discomfort to him. Fortunately, this attempt was stopped when the lawyers who are representing these employees actually intervened to stop the attempt to execute.
What exactly did they want to attach?
We are not very sure what exactly they would have attached. They were at his private property and residence, and they wanted to take property from there. But the lawyers who are representing them did intervene on seeing that there is no judgment against President Tsvangirai at all. These people were employed by Mr. BK and Mr. Mangoma. And at any rate, the debts that accrue to the MDC do not accrue to the leader of the MDC. So it was clear that the attempt by the officials was to embarrass President Tsvangirai. Fortunately, the lawyers representing the employees did intervene to stop that attempt.
So how is this legal complexity being addressed? Have you also appealed to the courts for protection? What is happening?
We have our legal options. The first one is first to make sure that the embarrassment that the state officials continue to try to make on President Tsvangirai is stopped.
That was MDCT spokesman and Mr. Tsvangirai's lawyer Douglas Monzora speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
ZANU-PF Chairman Simon Kayamoyo yesterday read the riot act to the party's provincial chairpersons and issued a gagging order barring them from talking publicly about the escalating factional fights that are threatening to tear the ruling party apart. Moyo called for the emergency meeting after senior and junior party members started trading barbs and engaging in physical fights publicly. A similar crisis meeting for party provincial secretaries was also convened by Party Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa. The party chairman also barred party members from dragging First Lady Grace Mugabe's name into their factional fights. Friction in the party is said to have also been heightened by the decision by the Women and Youth League, respectively, to beg Grace Mugabe to take over from Opam Chinguri as the women's boss. Efforts to get a comment from Moyo were futile, as he was said to be traveling. Political analyst Pedzisai Ruhanya tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Kayamoyo's directive will likely be ignored.
I think it is a misguided remark by Simon Kayamoyo. It is known, and publicly known for that matter, that Simon Kayamoyo belongs to a faction. But he belongs to a faction that is under siege. And what Simon Kayamoyo is trying to do is trying to please the president. He's trying to please the first lady by trying to say that he is protecting the first family from scrutiny. But what he is doing actually is a violation of democratic principles. Grace willingly and voluntarily joined politics on her own volition. And when you join politics being a public issue, she must not avoid public scrutiny. She must not avoid public discussion. She must not avoid being discussed in issues and matters related to her political environment. So what Simon Kayamoyo is saying is hopeless talk.
Do you think the Mujuru faction in ZANU-PF is losing the media war?
It has never won that war, actually. The major difference, like I've always argued, between the two factions is that whereas there is some purported support from Mujuru on the ground, it is without doubt that she has no strategists, that she can be full of people who do not think, who do not strategize, who do not sit over time to evaluate the political implications of what they say. And whereas, on the other hand, the Mnangagwa group appears not to have a lot of support, but in terms of strategies, in terms of ideas, I think that's where the brains of ZANU are in the Mnangagwa group.
That was political analyst Pedzisai Ruhanya speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
The World Health Organization says another 84 people have died in West Africa as a result of the Ebola virus, bringing the death toll from the epidemic to 1,229. We know countries like Zimbabwe do not currently have problems with the Ebola virus, but just in case, here is how you can prevent the Ebola virus from spreading. Avoid physical contact with people showing symptoms, that is continuous high fever, red eyes, vomiting and stomach ache. Wash hands thoroughly and frequently, including under the fingernails. Use soap and clean water. Use hand sanitizer if soap is not available. Use gloves when taking care of infected patients. Cook all animal food and byproducts thoroughly. Avoid bush meat. Wear protective clothing and gloves when handling animals. And do not touch anyone who has died from Ebola.
The Youth Forum of Zimbabwe claims that the country's Black Economic Empowerment Program has been largely hijacked by the elite who benefited from the 2000 land reforms and other state-sanctioned schemes. Youth Forum Director Wellington Zindobe says this has prompted the organization to hold a key meeting for all stakeholders this evening to map the way forward. Zindobe says business executives, lawmakers, Harare Council officials, civic city leaders and members of the public are expected to attend the meeting. He tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that time has come for Zimbabweans to take control of the program, which compels foreign-owned companies to transfer majority stakes to locals.
The seminar is going to afford us an opportunity to evaluate the indigenization and economic empowerment process since its launch. You'd realize that as a nation, and also through the lenses of the ruling party, I think there is a lot of talk around the indigenization and economic empowerment process, also viewed through the economic policy blueprint, as Zuma said. So I think as a society, we are also realizing that I think we have not been engaging so much on this front. So we are trying to afford ourselves an opportunity to look at these things so that we can be able to build our own capacities, informed capacities to monitor and evaluate the talk and also practical developments on the ground by the government.
Now, at the moment, what can you say about the indigenization program?
It has got serious challenges that are befalling it, particularly when you realize that it is first generating into an elitist club of great individuals who are into racketeering, because the same people who are in government, the same people who benefited through multiple land ownerships, are the same people who are now again benefiting from the indigenous healing empowerment processes. Far from the talk that this is an initiative that is supposed to be benefiting the ordinary poor men and women in the urban identities and in the rural areas. So we are seeing further marginalization of the people who are already poor.
And that was Wellington Zindobe of the Youth Forum of Zimbabwe speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare.
The trial of MDCT activist Witness Dube, who was arrested in June this year after allegedly assaulting another driver aligned to the renewal team and hijacking a vehicle, was postponed to September 17 for trial after Dube's lawyers requested more time to study the papers. Dube, who is a driver for MDCT Deputy President Thokozani Kupe, allegedly assaulted former MDCT Matabeleland North Chairman Sengezo Shabangu's driver and also stole cash and cell phones. Dube told the court he was obeying an order from his party president Morgan Tsvangirai that all provinces should repossess all party property from the renewal team after their fallout. Shabangu, who's aligned to the renewal team, tells reporter Sitandekile Mhlanga his party is still waiting for the MDCT to comply with the High Court order directing them to return the vehicle.
The matter was referred from the Magistrate Court to the Regional Court on the basis that the nature of the case, the Magistrate had no jurisdiction to deal with it. So it was referred to a higher court, which is the Regional Court. But unfortunately, it was transferred yesterday. So the defense lawyers had not received the state papers. So they wanted to go and study the state papers.
Last time we talked, there was supposed to be a vehicle to be returned. What exactly is going on?
There were two fronts. We took the civil route where we went to the High Court, and we were granted the interim that these guys were supposed to return the car, and we won it to the High Court. So, and the other route was the criminal court, which is still a work in progress. So all what we're waiting for, this is just a delay that we don't get our property. But I'm sure the magistrate was convinced that the next in 2 weeks' time, the trial is going to take off. We are not expecting anything less than a conviction, which is quite reasonable based on the charge.
And that was former MDCT Matabeleland North Chairman Sengezo Shabangu, who is now aligned to the renewal team. He spoke with Sitandekile Mhlanga from Wange.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
is Zimbabwe making any strides in giving women 50% political representation by 2015?
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The World Health Organization says Ebola could infect more than 20,000 people across West Africa by the time the outbreak is over. The UN agency gave its assessment today as it launched a $490 million campaign to fight the epidemic that it says has killed at least 1,550 people. It says the total number of reported cases has topped 3,000, but added the actual number could be two or four times higher. The majority of the infections have been in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. The WHO said the outbreak continues to accelerate, but that most cases are concentrated in a few local areas. Earlier today, Nigeria's health ministry reported two more cases of Ebola, bringing the country's total to 15. Officials said today that a man working for the Economic Community of West African States recovered from an Ebola infection without treatment, but that his doctor died last week from the virus.
The safety tests for an experimental Ebola vaccine are being fast-tracked, meaning trials on humans could start in weeks. The British drug company GlaxoSmithKline said today the vaccine is expected to be given to healthy volunteers in Britain and the United States in mid-September, and then to people in Gambia and Mali. GlaxoSmithKline is working with the U.S. National Institutes of Health to develop the vaccine, which a British-based medical charity, Wellcome Trust, is helping to fund the vaccine trials.
And Australian officials say they further refined the search area for the Malaysia Airlines jetliner that mysteriously disappeared in March. Deputy Prime Minister Warren Truss said today authorities will now focus a little further to the south within the present search area in the southern Indian Ocean. Truss said the determination was made following further analysis of a failed attempt to contact the Boeing 777. He said the new information suggests the plane may have turned south earlier than previously thought.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
The proposal by the ZANU-PF Women's League to appoint First Lady Grace Mugabe as the Women's League Secretary has ignited debate in the country on a number of issues, in particular women in leadership. Only four women in Zimbabwe were appointed to cabinet last year by President Robert Mugabe, angering women's groups in the country. Defending his position, Mr. Mugabe said women should do better in elections if they wanted to be eligible for cabinet posts. The Southern African Development Community has mandated that its members give women 50% political representation by 2015. For perspective on where Zimbabwe is right now in terms of uplifting women, we turned to Women in Support Network, or WIPSU, director Fani Chirisa and Temba Nzounenda, who's the secretary of the group Varume Mukai Vukai Madoda. Chirisa says more needs to be done to remove obstacles obstructing women in leadership.
At a very low level in terms of women's participation in decision making, be it in private or public. I say this because if you look at the number of parliamentarians and if you look at the ratio, it's still a low number to me, and yet the constitution says otherwise.
Mr. Nzounenda, how do you view Zimbabwe in terms of gender and in terms of having women in leadership? Would you say the country is lagging behind, as what Mrs. Chirisa is saying?
I tend to agree with her a little bit that we are lagging behind, yes. Like in any situation where different participants are involved in an effort to achieve something. There's always those who manage to do things better because probably they are better financially resourced or resourced in other aspects. But yes, Zimbabwe is ranked slowly but making very important and positive strides towards the empowerment of women. In SADC, I think we lag behind very few countries like probably South Africa and one or two others, but we are making significant strides towards achieving what we intend to achieve, like the Millennium Development Goals. But we are so sadly and badly short-sourced in that aspect, and that also affects our progress in achieving our targets.
Mrs. Chirisa, is it only about having the structures in place? Because yes, we know they do talk about 50-50 representation, but what then happens within those political parties, within those organizations? What needs to be done to make sure that women are not muzzled out of constituencies? Because in the last election, we saw women being muzzled out and some of them being, you know, offered for proportional representation. What is your response, Mrs. Chirisa, to what he has just been saying?
I think the problem we have with the political parties is that when it comes to election time, women are given the difficult constituencies where the men know that they will not win. So these are the constituencies that they give to women. And as women, we are not saying anything about that. We are not voicing to refuse to be put in difficult constituencies. We feel we have been favored, and yet no, these guys are trying to push us out, because when you are given a difficult constituency, it's obvious that the male from the opposition will then get in and you lose. And they will say, but we gave you the chance and you did not make it. So what we need to do is to sit down with the men who are the leaders in those political parties. There are very few who are in the top positions in these political parties. So if there are so few women in those senior positions, it becomes difficult for women to then push for more women in decision making, for more women to stand for elections, be it at local government or at national level. So this is an area that maybe organizations, women's organizations, need to work on to deal with the political parties and to make sure that women are not getting or given the difficult constituencies.
Coming back to you, Mr. Nzowinenda, you talked about the issue of encouraging young women to take up science subjects and others that are difficult. What more can be done to make sure that we encourage those young girls to take up these subjects?
The greatest problem that you'd probably find is you can only probably come up with my Olivia Mchena and a few others. Then when you look at the male side, not because they are there because of patriarchy, you'd find so many of them that can take up positions in such fields. So I still think that we need to put resources in educating our girl child that the science field is theirs too. You probably realize that this year, the teacher who has the best results in physics is a female teacher from Anderson School in Wari. She's a female. And then we want such women to be emulated by our girl child, so that when we want women in positions of decision-making in any particular industry within our borders, we don't have to look at men only. We want competition from women. We want competition between men and women competing for that position. But coming back, I want to respond to a few things that my colleague said. I don't know what the criteria would be to rate other constituencies as difficult constituencies, because I've never seen any woman who has come forward to say that I wanted to contest in this constituency, but I've been pushed to such a difficult constituency. And then she would go on to give us what criteria she used to rate it as a difficult constituency.
In closing, Mrs. Chirisa, is it more about lack of action to implement those laws or what?
The mix of both not being able to implement, and also, as my colleague is saying, that maybe as women, we are not doing much, especially the politicians. The women's organizations are trying their level best to push. But it also needs the political will of the women who are already in politics to make sure that their voices are heard in those structures, which then guide them to get into decision-making bodies. And also there's another issue that, well, when they get up there, sometimes they forget where they come from. And this is another area that we need to work on to say, hey, look here, women. You are there because we supported you, so you should also support other people, other women, to climb the ladder.
Your last word, Ms. Anzonen.
I would sincerely urge women to keep fighting for equity. We are bound to achieve more if we fight for equity rather than the mirage that we chase always when we misconceptualize the equality debate. I'll be with you all the way in fighting for equity. Only then we will probably achieve the equality aspect of it.
That was Mr. Nzounenda, the secretary of the group of Arume Mukai Vukani Madoda. You also heard the views of Women in Support Network or WIPSU director Fanny Cherisa. They both spoke from Harare.
Zimbabwean mbira player, vocalist and percussionist Hope Masike says she feels honored for being selected alongside musician Blessing Chimange to represent the country at a cultural tour in the United States in October. Masike and Chimange will join 23 other international musicians at the cultural tour, which was organized by the U.S. State Department under its One Beat program. One Beat is an initiative of the U.S. Department States Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. It is produced by Found Sound Nation. Masike spoke with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye earlier on.
For me, it's a huge honor, and it's very humbling and exciting also, because I hear there were about 1,500 and more applications, and to be selected as one of the few artists out of so many applications is a huge honor. It says a lot. It says they have looked at what I have done, and I think I am one of the best people to represent my country, to represent the culture of Zimbabwe and the music from Zimbabwe. So it's a huge honor.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. What kind of music do you sing, and what are you hoping also to learn from the United States?
My kind of music, very generally speaking, is called Mbira music. However, Mbira music is very broad, because there's been Mbira music even in pre-colonial times. There's been Mbira music even now, there's still Mbira music. But my type of Mbira music is a fusion of Mbira and other different music styles. What I have tried to do is to portray Mbira in a different way and to show that it can be used to create any type of music, to demystify this belief that other people have that Mbira is demonic and is only used for one type of purpose. So my type of music, still very generally speaking, can be called Mbira fusion, or you can call it contemporary Mbira fusion.
That was musician Hope Masike speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye from Harare.
Hey, listeners, please remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host today will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about women and leadership in the country. Chris, now we recap today's top stories.
Officials from the Deputy Sheriff's Office attempted to attach a former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's property.
And ZANU-PF issues an order gagging its provincial party bosses from speaking about factional fights that are threatening to tear the party apart.
That's our broadcast this evening. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira, wishing you a pleasant evening.